You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour for the week. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. It's Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Mike Johnson. Got Greg Vanney coming up, head coach TFC. In about 5 minutes. Brad Lidge later in the hour to tee up Game 3 of the World Series. Week 7 in the NFL officially underway. A big report in terms of the NBA and the idea that they are targeting a December 22nd start date, which would be less than 2 months from today. It should be a big win for fans, right?
Yeah.
Like a big win for fans. And unexpected from my end. And we wait to see what's going to happen with the NHL, which I don't get the impression like they're going to have an answer for us in the next couple of weeks. They might, but you got to come up with some sort of a plan, right? The next month and a half.
They're in a good spot, right?
Like, yeah.
The NBA can make these announcements. Mm-hmm. They can share the information that the NBA has and what lets the NBA think they can do it then. And they can just take their time, be patient, much like they did with the announcing of the bubble cities. Everyone's like, just say it already. It's Vegas. And they waited and waited and waited and finally got to a spot where they made the most informed decision. But, you know, they basically are sister leagues. You know, they have lots of connections in the front offices of both leagues. So if basketball can do it in December, then hockey can do it January 1st.
I agree.
And I think that's how they have to approach it.
Well, January 1st, I still don't know if that's realistic, but that's a placeholder. Like, Gary Bettman doesn't shoot from the hip when it comes to anything. And when he's had his media and talked, especially during the Cup Final, he had his kind of State of the Union. He said, if I was just spitballing here. He wasn't spitballing. He had a plan.
No,
he said, you know, the NHL is going to probably come back with no fans early on, and we're hoping to, you know, like he kind of laid it out. I think January 1st is a placeholder, and that's a target date. But it wouldn't surprise me if training camp started December 26th, and then all of a sudden January 15th, you've got either 82 games or a 72-game or a 70-game schedule. You could try that. And if you've got the NBA, which, like you just said, Johnny, is mirroring the NHL, there's a template there. And I guarantee you, these leagues are watching the NFL. They're watching TFC. They're watching every other sport that's going on right now. And pulling little nuggets of information, probably learning from each other through trial and error, unfortunately, because this is all still new. They're going to get it done. But the NHL, I want to give them a long leash here. They nailed it out of the park with the bubble, and so did the NBA. So, you know, if they feel like it's right to start for the NBA December 22nd, and if the NHL says, you know what, we're not going to start till January 15th or February 1st, I'm going to afford them the benefit of the doubt based on how well they conducted the bubble. That's just me, though.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I do think there's a timeline in terms of how many games they want to get in, and if you want to get closer to 82, then you've got to get going sooner than later. You can't start on February 1st and expect to play 82 and be done by the end of July.
But that goes back to the idea of the prorated salary. Like, if the league has to pay the players prorated – and can somehow live up to the terms of the television contracts by playing fewer games, don't you think the league then would want to push the start date as late as they can? Because then they don't have to pay the players as much. The games that will play will have a greater likelihood of having fans in them. So that part, like the motivation to try to get 82 games, I'm curious to see where that falls and why.
Yeah. And eventually we'll get some answers. But I think the world has changed a lot since we were in a position last April wondering about what these leagues are going to do, where the NHL and the NBA jumped into the bubble before anyone else really got started. Even MLS, right? MLS's back was in the bubble down in Orlando. But I think the reaction to sporting teams using tests is not nearly as volatile as it was 5 or 6 months ago. The understanding that COVID is going to pop up, right? It's not going to shut your league down. Didn't shut baseball down. They're playing the World Series tonight. The World Series is going to be handed out. Hasn't shut down the NFL. COVID's going to pop up. You can work with it. You know, it's not going to be easy, but you make it work. where 6 months ago it was like, wow, if you get one case, does the whole league shut down? Like, those were legitimate questions. It's not anymore, right? And the bubble's not happening. So the bubble's done. They're going to be flying around. And, you know, it's just a matter of time till we find out more from the NBA and the NHL. But as we mentioned, MLS is back, was ongoing down in Orlando. And they've been playing the regular season now for quite some time. And in Toronto, TFC, they can't play at home. They haven't been playing at home. They've been down in Hartford. And they got a big game tomorrow against Philadelphia, and they are currently leading MLS when it comes to the standings. And to chat about that, we're now joined by their head coach, Greg Vanney. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well. Thank you.
I hope you're doing well. You must be a happy man. The supporter shield is coming out. You got your wish.
That is a lot of pull, Greg, in the league offices. You come out spitting fire. You don't like it. And the reverse course, also, they're giving it out to you.
Yeah, I don't think it was just me, but we were fairly vocal. I think, you know, my words were not just about Toronto FC. It's about every team that's, you know, every player that starts a season is looking to win a championship and lift a trophy at the end of it. You know, there's only a few weeks left for the trophy to then kind of get pulled away from you. And not when you being those players is just not, I don't think it's the right action. So really our team was in the lead and we're battling for it. We got four games left to try to lock it down, but really it's just about the bigger issue of that's what professional sports are about. You're trying to win the trophies along the way and create legacy for yourself, for your team, for your club, for your city, your fans, everybody. And so I think they did the right thing. I applaud them for being open-minded about, you know, listening to the feedback and the sentiment that was going on around the league and to being open-minded enough to reversing course and putting it back out there for teams to battle for here down the stretch.
Well, we heard your comments about it, speaking with Christian Jack, and they were very pointed, and we discussed it a lot on this show, and we totally agreed with you. But were your players indicating the same passion? Were they disappointed by the idea that the Shield would not be available if and when TFC holds on to this lead and wins the regular season?
Yeah, the players were pissed. You know, our guys, obviously more than most of the teams in the league, barring the other two Canadian teams, have had to change their entire life this year in terms of where they're living, seeing their families. Obviously, you guys know that. You've just explained that we're down in Hartford and living away from our families and all that kind of stuff. So for our guys to be engaged and locked in and to be singularly focused on each one of these games to get results, we've played three games at home the whole season. You know, that's what they do it for. So they were pissed. To be honest with you, before I made the comments, we hadn't talked as a team. I had heard from some of the staff around the team that the players were pissed. So I just put my own words into sort of what I had understood to be their emotions, and then a lot of them were appreciative of the things that I had said and the forcefulness, I guess, at which I had said some of those things. So we were behind each other. We supported each other through those comments. And, you know, when we went out to play the other night, after we heard our mission was to make sure that we put ourselves into position to be talking about the supporter shield and not just to be, you know, whining about it as the third or fourth place team or something, but to try to actually be in position to win it. So.
Greg, you mentioned some of the challenges that your team has faced this year, kind of unique to the Canadian clubs not being in Toronto. Yeah. How has that been different for you as a coach? I know you have professionals, they're going to play hard, and they're going to get along and do the best they can. But as a coach, have you had to do things differently given your unique situation of not playing really home games?
Yeah, I mean, we try to approach from a, you know, from a mentality perspective, sometimes a tactical perspective. We tried to approach every game as if we're the home team. We're going to win the game. We're trying to get 3 points. So we haven't had to change a lot in terms of our approach to the games. What's different is that we are, like, we're together all the time. And so trying to keep things fresh, the mentality of the group in the right place, you know, doing things, sometimes recognizing when things are getting heavy and we need to lighten it up a little bit, just, you know, to keep sanity within the group, things like that. That's a little bit different because there really isn't much escape. Like we're in it all the time. And so for me, I don't mind. That's how I live when I'm at home. I'm in it all the time. And, you know, I'm either at the facility and working with the young kids or the academy coaches or with, I'm always in it. I don't mind. But a lot of our guys, they need the separation. They need the mental break. And we're trying within our staff and with the players and everybody, what we're doing is just trying to keep sanity within the group and give guys the wherewithal to stick with this for the long haul, because we're still hopefully probably only about halfway through if we can run this thing all the way to the end. So that's been the challenge. But our guys have been great. You know, what part of the benefit of it, if anything, is that guys are, when they're not on the field or training or playing a game, is they're in recovery mode. They don't have anything else to do. They're not taking the family out somewhere or the dogs for a walk or all over the place. Like, they're really just in recovery mode. So it cuts both ways, but our guys have been really professional about their approach and have been focused this whole time.
Well, you got a big one tomorrow night taking on Philly. They're chasing you. You got a 3-point spread on them, only 4 games left in the sked. Yeah. You know, obviously a big game, that goes without saying, but how much of this is, you know, continuing to fight for that top spot in the regular season, but also preparing for the playoff run that you just referenced, and how big of a tune-up game might this be tomorrow against Philly?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, we are focused to try to win the supporter shield. I mean, we're in the position and we're 4 games away. It's a big trophy. We all believe it. If you're a traditionalist in soccer, it's a big trophy to show that you've been able to been the team that could sustain over the long haul. That's a big deal. So for us, that's one of the things that we're for sure front and center on our mind. The second part of that is the way that these games have been lined up for us to get as many games as we have is we've just played games back to back to back. You know, last week, 5 games in 16 days, which is a brutal stretch for players. Is we're trying to get guys healthy. We're trying not to expose guys that might have little things that we're trying to heal. So we're trying to win this supporter shield. At the same time, we're trying to get our team back as whole as possible for the playoffs so that we can try to make a run at the cup. So there's a lot. There's a couple of different things going on, but we're trying to manage all of that. And in every game, we're trying to put the team on the field that we feel can get us a result, given, you know, the health and the well-being of the guys and where they're at. So that's been a challenge. But everybody has stepped up. You know, when we've asked for a different guy to step into a role, they've done that so far, and they've done it well. So we're gonna have to keep doing that here down the stretch, and hopefully we can start to get guys back. Between, you know, some tomorrow, some midweek, and hopefully we can start to build the group back together.
With Greg Vanney, again, TFC, currently leading their division, leading the league in terms of MLS, and they take on Philadelphia tomorrow. The club has had a recent history of attracting players from overseas. It began with Jermaine Defoe, who had a pretty good start here but kind of fizzled out, wanted to go back to Europe, went back to Europe. We know the history of Jovinko. He was lights out. With TFC, yep. But Pozuelo has been kind of a different beast, different style of player, but his numbers have been off the charts, and he continues to produce at a very high level. You know, what is it about his game that has worked so well, this transition to MLS, and him just continuing to be a force, what seems like game in, game out for you guys?
Yeah, he's you know, I think the guys that come to MLS and have the most success are they're very good players, which, you know, there's a lot of guys who come to MLS that are very good players. Some do great, some not so great. But I think he came for all the right reasons. He's willing to work hard. He's a humble guy that wants to work within the team, but then his qualities can shine in moments within the team, but also moments that he can create for himself. And so he's got that kind of old school playmaker ability that, in some places has disappeared from the game, but he still has it. And in our league, he's very clever. And like I said, very deceptive about some of the things that he does that and how he scores goals. He does some things that I probably couldn't even explain to you that goalkeepers have such a difficult time trying to figure out what's going to happen. And the next thing you know, the ball's behind him. And so he's got this unique talent about the way he goes about things. But the most important thing is his humility, his hard work, and his willingness to be a part of a team. And then within that team, he does great things. And so those are key attributes to him. And, you know, we love him being here, and he makes our team better. And obviously he's fun to watch. So,
Greg, in that locker room, that sounds exactly like the kind of guy that other guys want to play with, because he's such a good facilitator finish himself, but also such a great facilitator. Everyone kind of gets better being around him. Does he have that kind of universal respect where the guys acknowledge, like, you know, not only does he look good himself, but he's helping us all look, you know, maybe better than we actually are?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that guys love about him. And I think that's a unique quality about players when they come to this league is if they can make, you know, obviously the MLS isn't the greatest league in the world yet. We're working towards that. We're trying to get there. But the guys who come with supreme talent and can help players around them to be better players, to be more effective, more efficient, but also play those guys into their strengths and recognize those other players on the field for what they're really good at too. They become, like you said, they become facilitators. They're not just great players themselves. They become facilitators for others to be great. And that's what helps the team to be great. And I think that's what MLS is all about, is if you can maximize the strengths of your players, because all players have weaknesses in MLS and all players have strengths. And if you can maximize those strengths and you have players on the field who respect each other's strengths and can play to those, then you can have a really good team and a team that can do good things and for a long time, which is kind of the space we've been at. And Ollie is that guy for us. And I think that's even been his transition from last year to this year. I think last year he came and he felt like he needed to do a little more because he had that DP status, which you don't have anywhere else in the world until you come to MLS. And so there was a feeling sometimes you had to do more. And now I think he has developed I can get the most out of these guys around me as well, and I can play to that. And in the end, that's going to help him as well. So he's really learned more about our team, the league, over the course of the last year, and I think that's really helped him to take off to another level even this year from where he was last year, which was quite good.
Toronto FC, Philadelphia Union, tomorrow kickoff at 7:30. It's going to be a fun one. You're almost at the finish line, and then obviously, yeah, like you said, the real dance kicks off with the playoffs right around the corner. So best of luck down the stretch. Best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you, guys.
I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. Thank you for doing this, Greg.
Great. Thanks. Appreciate it.
There he is, Greg Vanney, TFC head coach.
You know what I wonder, Hayes, is that so all around the world in soccer, football, the number one thing you try to win is like the regular season, the league. And it's only in North America where, you know, what matters most is the playoffs, because they don't even have playoffs in the leagues. They have, you know, the FA Cups and the Champions League and everything else. They don't have domestic playoffs like they have in MLS. And I wonder what the mindset is for, you know, he's going on record saying they really want the regular season championship. But I wonder, like, trying to talk to the guys who are not from North America and try to balance how important do we approach winning the regular season versus how important do we approach what is more important in North America, which is, you know, the actual playoffs.
And right.
So it's a weird dynamic there, especially when the team is international.
Well, exactly. I mean, you look back a couple of years ago when they had that monster year and they won MLS Cup.
Yeah.
The regular season, they like ran away with it, I believe, like historically strong mm-hmm. regular season, yet it doesn't really resonate so much here. You know, when you think right. of TFC and their success and the ultimate success, and you think of when Tim Leiwicki was even hired, and it was, we're finally going to get this thing going, because remember how ugly it was. Like, we lose sight yeah. of that. TFC now is just a juggernaut year in, year out. They're in contention. They've been yeah. to three MLS Cups in the last, you know, 4 years or whatever it is. But prior, like, there was a six-year run where they were an absolute joke, like a laughingstock, and could not get it going. But when Leiwicki got here, it wasn't, we want to win the supporters' shield. Like, I don't remember him ever saying that. It was, we're going to win MLS Cup.
I never heard of supporters' shield when Leiwicki
yeah.
was here, right?
No,
right. Never
exactly.
heard that thing was.
It wasn't anything right. anyone cared about, and it was more about the playoffs. And I'm sure that's an adjustment for players, for international players, who are like, wait a minute, what are we, like, it's a playoff,
what?
You know, and
Cup?
It's
what
a bracket, and
yeah.
a, yeah, but, you know, that's the way it works over here in North, I think it's the smart play for MLS. You've got to adapt to your surroundings, and in North America, we are the playoff continent. That's what we do, that's what we love, yeah. and that's where the magic happens.
Oh, he's a fiery coach,
that's what it is, right,
because
that's where upsets yeah. can happen, and Cinderella's, if it's just the best team wins the regular season, you know,
you get a Leicester City like once every 50 years or something like that.
Right.
But more or less, like EPL, which is what I would follow the closest, and I don't follow it day in, day out, but it's generally, yeah. you know, United, City, Liverpool, Tottenham, Chelsea, you know, maybe Everton sneaks in, maybe Tottenham, although I yeah. think I already said them.
Arsenal, on occasion.
Yeah, Arsenal, exactly. There's six or seven teams tops that might get in there. And then beyond that, you're just hoping you don't get relegated.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been a tough run. I mean, talking to Andy Petrillo, at least, like, so she's married to the goalie coach or whatever
John.
It is. Like,
yeah,
they've been able to come back to Canada for like 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. And they have to quarantine. Nice part is they don't ever practice when they're in Canada because they have to stay in their houses. But then they just come back to like hang out at home for a couple of days and then shoot back down to the States. It's been a really grind
really
for
bizarre
them.
Like yeah. month and a half. But my understanding is that, and this is another thing that I think we have to consider with where this is going with our borders and the idea of opening up, is technology has advanced a lot where these guys have like selective apps. It's not like a COVID app. It's basically you're being tracked. Right, mm-hmm. Like that's what's happening in the NFL. These guys are being tracked.
Yeah, and the one guy sidestepped the tracker, right?
Yes, and Trent Brown, and he tested positive, and now they're like, we know that you were, messing yeah. around or
gave
doing
it
whatever.
Gave it the slip.
Yeah,
and I wonder if that is going to apply here with crossing the border. Not yeah. so much. I could see rapid testing. Now I'm really getting crazy here, but I could see rapid testing with their own teams: Raptors, Blue Jays, seven Canadian hockey teams. Rapid right. testing when you land. You're negative, go ahead, live free, but, be reasonable and don't be silly. Yeah. But for the Yankees rolling through town, okay, rapid test, but then also this app, you're not leaving the hotel, basically. Right. You're playing right. your games and you can go, which I thought was a reasonable option 4 months ago when the decision was being made on whether or not the Jays could play at home. But I could see technology factoring as well in terms of teams coming up, a one-off. Maybe a team comes up and you play the Raptors twice.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's what happened. The Knicks come up and you play the Raptors Friday right. and Saturday.
Get your two games in.
Yeah, and then you head home right after the game Saturday and you don't come back up.
And it's like house arrest. You got an ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
You're being tracked.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's going to make, skipping a curfew on the road that much harder. Coaching me there, tracking them. Noodles, I saw that you were wherever
at Real Sports. You're on college. But that's the thing. Like nowadays, NHL teams have those sleep trackers and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you go on the road, the strength and conditioning guys are tracking, guys' rest. And I know of a few guys that would give their watch or their tracker to somebody who was staying in and then go out type of thing. So the guy's wearing, he's got like eight watches or monitors on his arm as he goes to bed and everyone else is out.
That would be it.
The one guy who's staying in, he's just got arms and 25
arms
watches and just layered on his
and
arms.
Everyone on the team has the exact same sleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Same heartbeat.
Sleep patterns.
Same blood type. Same social insurance number. Everything. Brad Lidge coming up on Game 3 of the World Series. And some big news starting to percolate in the NFL. You're going to want to hear this. We'll tell you about it next. All right, Brad Lidge coming up in just a moment. Game 3 of the World Series tonight. The Tampa Bay Rays looking to follow in the footsteps of the Tampa Bay Lightning because the Lightning are already home free with a cup. Rays are three wins away from a World Series, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, are in a pretty good spot. They're coming off a big win. They laid a beating on the Packers last week, and there is news starting to brew throughout the NFL that Antonio Brown is on his way to Tampa. It sounds as if this is basically a done deal. It's not a lock yet. Tom Brady's been pushing it hard from behind the scenes, and look at the weapons. They've already got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, which I think you could argue was the best 1-2 punch in the whole league, close to it, if not the best 1-2 punch in terms of wide receivers on a short list, top two or three in the league. Antonio Brown you would be adding. You've already got Gronk. You just signed Leonard Fournette. Like, how many weapons is enough? At what point does it get
around.
Too much?
But Hayes, you can't trust anything until it's done. Because wasn't he going to Seattle 3 days ago? And it's Antonio Brown. So clearly Tom Brady has an affinity for this guy, though, at some point.
But it didn't work out in
– For a bit.
It didn't work out in New England with him, though.
No, it didn't. They had to cut him.
Not.
Right. Like, and what's to say that it has – what's changed in him? Like, I don't trust Antonio Brown to get his act up, cleaned up off the field. Like
why would he go there, too, if he's trying to get his career back on path and he's the third option as of now?
Maybe right? Like he's like a slot receiver.
Not that I'm good, is that I'm a bad dude. If you go there and they are successful and you fall under the Tom Brady umbrella of greatness, maybe that it's not about can he play, it's just can he get along with people.
Well, we'll see. We'll pick up on that later in the hour. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. But here is former MLB closer, MLB Network radio host Brad Lidge back on Overdrive ahead of Game 3 tonight. How you feeling, Brad?
I'm feeling good. How about you guys? I mean, this is shaping up to be, after Game 1, a lot better World Series now that we've got Game 2 under our belt, and this Game 3 should be exceptional.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it tonight. And we talked about this yesterday, where the Rays' reputation, it's all about pitching, defense. And I thought Snell pitched pretty well, but it was like a modern-day quality start where he went 4 2/3, I believe. He walked 4 guys. I didn't think Blake Snell was the reason Tampa won Game 2. I thought it was that the bats came alive. They generated offense. They put runs on the board. They had 10 hits. I don't know if the bats got enough love based on Tampa's reputation coming out of Game 2.
Well, I would agree with that. I would also say that, this modern-day quality start, that's not Blake Snell's fault, because that dude should have stayed in the game longer. He should have easily completed 6 innings. I can't stand to see these guys getting yanked as early as they are. Charlie Morton, he's been yanked after 66 pitches, after, 5 or 6 dominant innings. So I can't stand to watch what's happening to starting pitching. I mean, we have to completely revise what is a good quality start, what's a good start. At this point, because, even a couple of years ago, Snell was throwing 5 or 6 or 7 innings. Don't forget, this is a Cy Young quality pitcher who had great stuff. So you're right. I mean, he got some love, but he should have stayed in the game a lot longer, and he could have got a lot more love. I think the Rays at the end of the day, though, they had to have an offensive output in Game 2. They were struggling badly. And, Brandon Lau certainly was, the guy that you could point the finger to easiest, because the numbers were just, they were real bad for him, but he came alive, and I think the recipe was perfect for the Rays in Game 2. Take nothing away from Gonsolin or Dustin May or whoever, but, the Rays needed to see a right-handed pitcher so that they could get the most out of Lau, so they could get G-Man Choi in there, so they could get Austin Meadows in there. I mean, the Rays are clearly a better team when they're facing a right-handed pitcher. They're pretty lefty dominant in terms of the good players offensively, and then you sprinkle in some Rosarena, who's kind of righty or lefty, hasn't really mattered a ton. So the Rays, they're facing another right-hander tonight, but it's not going to be an easy task, because Walker Buehler is throwing absolute cheese balls right now, and he looks really, really comfortable out there on the bump.
Brad, when you talk about pitchers, the starters specifically, they understand it's not their call. They have to do what their manager tells them. But like, do the players ever just like, no, I don't want to go out after 66 pitches. I don't want to go out. Like, at some point they say, I can still do this, or is it just by the numbers now and players have come to accept it and there's not even worth fighting that fight anymore?
Well, players have come to accept it, just like guys in the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen just have to accept that they might, they might be the closer. It might be Castilla, and he might be throwing, Diego Castilla might be throwing in the 4th or 5th inning. Like, he just has to accept that. And I think players by and large do. Now, that being said, Blake Snell was not super thrilled after his last start he had against the Astros, and he was kind of voiced his displeasure coming out of the game early. And I thought he got yanked way too early on this game too, considering that Kevin Cash let Glasnow throw 112 pitches. It does surprise me that he just doesn't seem to be careful, feeling comfortable with Blake Snell throwing, to the hitters a third time through. He really just doesn't want to see that for Snell. So it's a kind of a weird thing, but I think certain guys are earmarked as, he's not going to be successful the third time through. Don't even let him have a chance. And I think that's silly, because I think you need to look at the game. You look at what Dusty Baker did leaving in Zach Greinke with the Houston Astros, because he wasn't beholden to any kind of scientific formula of how many pitches a guy can throw. He was using his eyeball and saying, Greinke's got good stuff. I'm going to trust him. He's going to stay in there. And he got out of the inning. And I loved watching that, quite frankly. But, with Kevin Cash and Dave Roberts, you're going to see guys, managers that are more stuck to this, pitch limit theory, that they just can't see guys a third time through the order.
Well, you mentioned the attachment or how the game is so married to the stats, and baseball is more than any other sport. The other sports are catching up, but
But baseball was leading the charge, and they continue to lead the race when it comes to sabermetrics and analytics. And Kevin Kiermaier kind of popped off on those earlier today, because Kiermaier was not a finalist for the Gold Glove in center field. And he has basically been the man there for a number of years, like pretty much unanimously accepted as the best defensive center fielder probably the last decade in baseball. And he just said, I don't know what the numbers are. I don't care what they are. They're wrong. I should be up for the Gold Glove. And I can't really argue against that. I mean, if we I would think defense of any position in baseball, yes, there are analytics behind it. Yes, there are some metrics. But a lot of that truly is the eye test and the flash and what a guy – just the way the guy performs, the ego he plays with. I think all this should factor in terms of determining how we feel about a defensive player.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, so many things have changed with the analytics. I mean, this year for the Gold Glove, finalists, I mean, you look at some of those guys and, you know, no offense to Charlie Blackman. I love the guy. I'm out here in Colorado, and he's an awesome guy, but – I think he'd be the first to tell you he was surprised to be on that list. He didn't play a great right field this year. It was almost entirely based on some kind of analytic metric system this year that they used to just make sure guys were not committing errors. But you're right. I mean, you look at how much ground a guy is covering, the jumps he's getting on the ball. There are so many different things, and the eyeball test is a huge deal when it comes to things, even like a Gold Glove. I mean, it's not just purely statistical. And players know that. And I think players get very frustrated by how analytics are taking over the game to a point where it's actually potentially hurting the quality of what we're doing out there. And it's certainly not giving, you know, the players the credit they're due if they are great defensive players. I mean, you got half and half in this list of finalists, guys that are, you know, definitely great defensive players and guys that have no business being on that list. So it's weird how beholden we are to these analytics now. And I understand that 2020 is a little bit different year, and they couldn't quite see everybody. Obviously, you know, players couldn't really vote on it. Managers didn't see everybody. Media people didn't see everybody. So they're just going purely on the analytics. But it's becoming a little bit silly at this point. I'm all for changes in baseball. I love some of the rule changes that happened this year. I like that baseball is trying to get a little bit more action-packed. But some of these things are just, you know, there's just no reason. And I'll give you a perfect example. Having an opener in these playoffs, having an opener in the World Series, like the Dodgers have no reason to do that. Like they right. have guys like Gonsolin and May that can go the distance. They could have brought back Walker Buehler in game two on short rest, mind you, but he would have been able to give them four or five innings, great innings, I'm sure. But for some reason, they felt like they had to go with an opener theory because everyone else has done it. And I just think that's silly. So I there are some things that are just driving me crazy.
Brad, looks like roof is going to be closed tonight, perhaps some bad weather. Does that make a difference?
It does make a difference. And, I'll tell you this, when the roof is closed, it's a much bigger place to try and hit the ball out of the ballpark. I mean, I think it's been documented. It's pretty certain when that roof is open, the ball jumps. When it's closed, it takes a mammoth shot to get it out, especially to center field. Look, without having, you know, a ton of fans in there, I can't really say it brings in any kind of element of, you know, how loud it is in there or anything like that. I remember playing in Houston when we closed the roof. It was so much louder than when the roof was open. But like in Houston, when the roof was open, the ball traveled a lot more. So, closed roof means probably even more of a pitcher's duel. And, if I'm betting on an over-under on this game, I don't know what the run total or the implied run total would be. But I'd bet on the under with Walker Buehler and Charlie Morton on the bump and the ball not carrying tonight.
With longtime MLB closer Brad Lidge, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, was on with Dan Patrick earlier today, and he was asked about the shift. And he indicated during the interview that something might be coming in the future that would basically eradicate the shift. Like rules would be put in place where teams defensively cannot shift the way that they have been in recent years.
Just bunt down the third baseline.
Yeah, well, it just, like, to me,
Nobody knows how to bunt anymore.
That's the thing. No one's allowed to bunt anymore either because of sabermetrics. How dare you give away an out? But how would you feel about that, Brad? I mean, that's pushing it when you start legislating how teams can defend. That would be very extreme from my standpoint. But do you like the idea of trying to eliminate the shift?
Well, no, I don't. I think, you know, if you're rewarding guys that just flat out aren't able to hit the ball the other way because it's not, you know, enough offensive action for you, I think that's just silly. I think, you know, look, hitters have to be dynamic enough to be able to say they're giving me the entire left side of the infield. If I could just get a ball there, I've got a hit. And so many guys can't do that. And so we're going to say, you know what, because you're not a complete hitter, we're going to reward you. Because you're not a complete hitter, we need to change our system to not allow shifts. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, obviously maybe it sounds like I'm talking as a former pitcher here, but I really think we've given the hitters quite a lot these days. You know, the stadiums are smaller. It's obvious the ball is harder. It's jumping out of the ballparks at rates we've never seen recently. So I don't think we need to give even more offense. Like, at some point we'll kind of just get to a point where the numbers, you know, baseball is famous for, you know, and media are famous for wanting to compare numbers from generation to generation. But I think we're already getting past the ability to do that. But it seems like we're headed even further in that direction where, you know, we want games to be, you know, 10-8, 11-5, you know, that type of game every time. I think you're really changing the nature of the game if we continue to make rules for offensive production. You might make some people more happy, but I think you're going to lose some fans too, and I don't think it's in the best interest of baseball to do that.
Enjoy the game tonight, the rest of the World Series. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Brad.
All right, fellas, you bet. Take care.
Brad Lidge, longtime MLB closer, and against the shift. And so am I. I just think it's, you know, I don't love the shift, but it is a smart play. And to your point, Johnny, like, these guys need to work around it. Start hitting it the opposite
slop
way, and guess what?
There.
The shift will stop.
Yeah.
Although, I was trying to think, like, you know, a comparable but different sport. I mean, hockey put the trapezoid in to stop goalies from playing the puck. It's not like league don't change rules to legislate out things that they don't want to see.
Oh, sorry, Johnny. I was just going to say, wouldn't the shift be the equivalent of, like, the trap?
Mm-hmm.
You know, defensively, like, yep. In hockey, like, you know, making the trap, remember, and what was it when New Jersey did that in the early 2000s, like, making that illegal. It's a play. You have to work around it, you know, and to break the trap, it used to come up one wall, go back to the D, change sides. Like, eventually you found ways around it. The shift, you're going to find ways around it too. Like, that's, you know, that's part of coaching. That's, everything is almost overcoached in pro sports today. What do you think? Like, there's not a lot of instinct. Guys go out there and the coaches have prepared them for exactly what's going to happen. It's just if you can execute or not, especially something like baseball.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's it. Like, these, they're it's pretty simple. Like, wherever the defenders are, baseball's been around for a long time. Hit it where they're not.
Thank you.
Like, that's
the
way it
works. Extra defenders out there. If they want to all stand on first base together, then do something different.
Go for it.
Then
go hit one the opposite way.
Well,
run on the bases.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like, they have to play in the dirt. They can't back up to the turf. Like, you know, just figure out ways to work around it.
But it sounds like it's going to happen, right? Like, if Manfred is starting to tell people and go publicly on the record that we're looking into it. And it's been a big topic of discussion. Like, I get it. The shift.
It's kind of a bad look or something.
It is.
You know? I mean,
it's
like,
goofy.
Visually, you're like, what's going on out
it's
there?
It's goofy. It's a goofy
and
look.
Why doesn't anyone hit the ball the other way? And it kind of like shows the limitations of the players on some level.
And it's utilized generally against your best players, right? Like, it started, I feel like David Ortiz was the first victim of the shift. You know, there may have been other. Maybe they were doing it for Bonds. I don't remember where it started or when it started. But it's usually, you know, the big boys. Like, it's Bryce Harper. It's a guy that you're like, okay, I paid money to come see this guy hit. He's a pull hitter, but he also launches a lot of home runs. But if he's not going to get a home run, I wouldn't mind, you know, find a gap, give us some action on the bases.
Mm-hmm.
But they found a way to take that out, and we'll see. So we're tracking this Antonio Brown stuff. It sounds as if Tampa is the place to be.
It's Tom. It's all Tom.
It
too.
Must be Tom Brady.
It is, but are they going to have that much more success with him in it? And are you potentially bringing a fiasco into that room?
You could be. Yep. You're taking a big gamble. He hasn't played in a long time, and I don't know what he's – I'm sure he's in shape. He was a freak when it came to the gym and being in shape. He'll
he's
be
been
in
running routes, too, like, before they started. He was, like – was he running routes with Russell Wilson?
Yeah, he was over the offseason. Like, that's the thing. It's a hit to Seattle. By all accounts, Russ and Seattle were pushing for him.
But right. It sounds like he's on his way to Tampa. It's not a lock yet, but it's moving in that direction. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Tee up the weekend. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NFL board, I'm looking at a couple of good teams that are going to bounce back. The Bills are at the Jets. It's a big spread, but Buffalo's lost 2 weeks in a row. Perfect timing to take on New York. I think they roll. I will take Buffalo. I think Green Bay bounces back at Houston as well. And I think Dallas is going to get one here, taking on Washington. It's ugly in both markets. I know what happened this past week, but I think Dallas better respond.
Yes.
It's a two-point spread. I will take the Cowboys on the road. Throw down 20. You can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine, it's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. So we have the World Series tonight.
Did you put on a jacket to go with your shirt and tie? What, like, what happened?
That's hockey. That's the transformation. Yeah. I've seen it all week.
The 6:45 turnaround
for what you're doing there.
Regino, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of working from home. I went and had a bite of some ribs and some mashed potatoes. I put on a tie and a shirt, and I came back through.
I thought maybe you had them ribs, and that's why I had to put the jacket on, because you got stains all over your shirt.
No,
that
was
an option.
I almost had an incident. I almost had an incident. I was biting off the rib, and it fell off, and it dropped into my lap. That was earlier in the 5 o'clock hour. Nobody was paying attention. You guys get up at the break. I sat and just stuffed my face. I don't know who's working the camera. I don't know if it's Megan or Kinger back there, but they must be just horrified watching me eat in a break.
I'm worried about that, the uncut version.
There's going to be sort of reel coming out of the pandemic home cuts.
Overdrive unplugged and just us mucking something, and it's all over our face. And
just
it's
everything.
It's not going to be good.
Everything
is good.
Disgusting.
You might
so
be
much.
Mark on my nose right here. I was trying to set up my camera, and I was like filling my computer looking down, and the light was too far tilted, and it just collapsed like right in my schnoz, right before the show started. So Megan got a good view of that one, too.
Good start. Yeah, there's some pretty good material, I think, if they've been recording of just us doing whatever we're doing. I can't even imagine what O's up to during a break when he's at home. He'll be back on Monday. We'll see what kind of mood he's going to be in after a couple of weeks off. But
I think he's been paying attention on Twitter. Once in a while, you see the comment left and right. Now he goes after Duthie. Duthie's on the book tour right now, so he's just giving it to Duthie every chance he gets.
It's an avalanche of books out right now for hockey fans.
No kidding, eh?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a book out. Everyone.
I'm about halfway through Duthie's. There's some pretty funny stories in there.
Have you got to my chapter yet?
No. Are you? I don't know if I'm in there anymore.
Maybe I got left on the editing room floor.
Oh, yeah, really? I don't know.
I've got mine at home. I have not skimmed through it yet.
I
intend on doing that.
My story is 26 pages in, so I'm early on. So.
Okay, I'll get to that.
Establish it early.
Beautiful.
Get them hooked in with Noodle Story. All right.
You're right, though, Johnny. It seems like everyone's got a book going right now, and everyone's doing the rounds. But
Matthew McConaughey's got
one,
too.
I heard McConaughey, and I heard it's just like the goofiest, typically McConaughey book. Like, half the chapters don't even make sense, and like, he's all into Zen and talking like he's a philosopher, but it doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I guess because McConaughey's been doing
heavy recreational marijuana use, it could be a good hit.
I think – hasn't he had a few incidents where the police have showed up and he's been naked playing the bongos?
Hey, listen, it happens to the best of us, man. You're in the confines of your own home. I mean, privacy, people, come on. I thought this was a free country.
That's fair. Fair enough. That's
fair
true.
Fair enough to
That's
McConaughey. True. Let's not, let's not bury his esteemed reputation.
All right.
That's true. Yeah,
all right, Johnny. True. Great stuff, buddy, as always. Thank you for doing this.
All right. You feel better. Have a good weekend. It'll get better from today, Hayes.
I feel fine now.
You're not good enough to get upset.
Yeah. I'm going to remind myself the next time I slash one into the woods that I'm not good enough to be upset, because it's so true. I'm not a good enough player. But I got to the summit, and then I just stumbled.
It's only one way to go.
Yeah, only going south. You knew it. All right, boys, good stuff as always. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the weekend. We are back Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority.
With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com. You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.